Yo, what is going down, everybody? Welcome to Show Me the Meaning, Wisecracks Movie Podcast.
Show me the meaning!
I am Austin Hayden, and I am joined by the Show Me the Meaning crew. We have Ryan.
Sup, film fans.
And joining us once again, we have Michael Burns.
Hello, friends.
All right, so this week we're going to do something a little different because it's not really a film per se. I mean, is it? I guess we can talk about exactly what this thing even is, but we're going to be talking about the new Bo Burnham comedy special. Is it even a comedy special? What is it exactly? We're going to talk about that, and it's basically been tearing the internets apart from TikTok parodies to cultural analysis to think pieces to what was the piece that you were just saying, Michael? Insiders, 26 things you may have missed.
Oh yeah, the Easter eggs and hints that you missed that if you understand it, you'll then get it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's been talked about a ton. People seem to really love it. And then some people I have read actually really loathe it. So we can kind of figure out what the deal is. But basically, it is Bo Burnham's new comedy special, just released actually last week on Netflix, written, directed, edited, shot, planned, staged, production design, etc., all by Bo Burnham from within the confines of a tiny little room / his guest house in that you see a little snippet of, actually, at the end of Make Happy, right? If anyone saw the comedy special Make Happy, the very final end scene is kind of, I guess, where this picks up. And so, yeah, so we're going to be talking a little bit about that. So before we delve into it and start tearing it apart, let's go around and get some first impressions on this, immediate reactions, that sort of thing. Let's start with Michael. I don't know how many times you've seen this. If you've only seen it once or if you've seen it a couple of times, what was it like the first time you saw it? What was it like if you revisited it, etc.?
I'm in the two-time club. First time I saw it, I enjoyed it a good amount. I was surprised by some of the, I guess what you'd call the more like social commentary he has going on there. But when I watched it the first time, I was left feeling a little bit like I liked what was going on form-wise. I don't know if I loved it content-wise. Read a bunch of think pieces and essays, watched it again. Second time through, I actually liked it better, probably because I had a more realistic set of expectations. I think on the second watch, I appreciate it within the boundaries that I think Burnham, I'll use the word suffers, but I know it sounds kind of negative, but within the boundaries he maybe suffers from or is constrained by. But I think it's pretty good. But I will say this is something that I enjoyed, that I've read a lot of takes on, where I also 100% see where some of the critical takes are coming from. And while I don't, while those takes haven't made me enjoy it less, I think many of them are correct. And I'm sure we can get into some of that stuff later.
Cool. Okay, what about you, Ryan?
Yeah, you kind of said some of the stuff I was thinking, Michael. I was really pumped for this. I love Bo Burnham. I think he's one of the great comics we got, if you want to even call him a comic. But then this, I don't know. The first time I watched it, I definitely did not really like it, unfortunately. I was kind of in the camp of thinking it didn't make me laugh once, I will say. I respected it. That's what I want to say off the bat, is that I respect it for what he was going for. But at the same time, never laughed once. And I respected the form and the editing especially. That's kind of my main takeaway, is that I liked his editing, especially going from scene to scene and the hard cuts, you know, that you get that would kind of gave the whole vibe of this is, you know, one man literally in this claustrophobic nightmare trying to give off this impression of, you know, what it's going like or what it's like to go through the pandemic, which we all just lived through. So it was relatable to that extent. But yeah, like you said, the content and the jokes and just kind of, and then the social commentary especially caught me off guard in a way that, I just don't think it was that effective for comedy. And then also just as social commentary, I also thought it wasn't that effective either. I thought it was kind of surface level and lame in a weird way, which was out of characteristic for him, because he's so kind of in his other stuff. And I don't know if it was just when he was younger, but he was just like very anti even saying anything. He thought, he even says on interviews, like, I'm not into saying every little thing that I, believe in my ideology. And even says it in this special. He's like, I don't, We don't need to say every one of our thoughts and stuff. But then he has literally a whole, you know, the thing with the sock puppet, which is just like a million thoughts at once. And I guess that is kind of the point. It's just like, you know, it's the erratic brain space he was in during the year, which I respect him putting on, committing to film for all of us to watch. But I don't think it worked for me. But it worked for a lot of people, so fuck me, you know. It's okay if anyone liked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
I'm a Burnham fan too, you know. Both Michael and I had a hand in helping to put out the Wisecrack video that we released on Bo Burnham a couple years ago. And, you know, I watched all of Burnham's stuff and I had known who he was, but it wasn't until I kind of like started to do a deep dive that I really started to respect, okay, I get what this young dude is doing. And there's also a sense in which I was looking at it and I'm like, this guy's quite young, and it is quite refreshing to see this young, he was 25 when he released Make Happy. So, you know, he's what, 23, 22 when he's doing like Words with, you know, the other ones. And it's like, God, so I thought there was something interesting to see his growth as an artist, right? So I had a lot of expectation that this was going to jump off from where Make Happy left us, which I thought was a really lovely ending when he does like that Kanye riff at the end, and at the very end he says, you know, I hope you're happy, and he walks off the stage. And I felt like, okay, this is a young man dealing with some interesting pressures of celebrity, of being a front-facing person, feeling like some imposter syndrome, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, okay, I can relate to that. I'm a middle-class white yuppie boy too, you know, and that's trying to create content and trying to reach people and connect with people at some level. So it's like I got a lot of that. And so I was really hoping that this would be like the next step forward, right? And the first time I watched it, it actually was a little slow. It took me a while to get into it. I'd say the first 10 or 15 minutes I was kind of like, okay, it's clever, I see his thing, but it didn't quite have the same energy. And maybe it's because it was just a different format and it took me a minute to get into it. And then I started to really get into it, and it was by the time the sexting song, the sexting segment came on, that I really started to get into it. And I was kind of like, okay. And then I was along for the ride. And I think it's clever. I think it's witty. It's got all the kind of, you know, self-awareness and stuff that we are accustomed to expecting from Burnham. I thought that there were some clever, funny quips. I actually really like the sock puppet because... So one of Burnham's biggest comedy influences is this absurdist named Hans Tewin, who just has like this black sock puppet that will like just eat a Mars bar on stage for like 5 minutes. And he's long said in interviews that that's like one of his biggest comedy influences. And so I actually kind of really liked that he just leaned fully into that and was like, fuck it, I'm just going to do a sock puppet thing, and but do it in my own way. And so I kind of really liked that. You know, we can talk more about this on the other side of just giving like a little brief synopsis here. On my second viewing, I got really into it from the get-go because I think I got it what he was doing more, you know? And I think maybe my expectations weren't met the first time through, and then maybe similar to what Michael was saying. The second time through, then I was kind of like, okay, I can actually, I'm kind of fully on board with what he's doing here. So I would say I really like it. I wouldn't say I love it. I don't think it like has changed the game. And I think there are some interesting things we can talk about, especially for someone like myself. And I think I also wonder, because I didn't really go through a lockdown here in Sydney. Like, we had a couple months.
You lucky son of a bitch.
Well, so like the idea of like, I'm trapped in a room and I want to put a bullet in my head is not quite, I didn't experience that to the same level of intensity.
Lucky you.
I know.
When he says the thing about how he wishes he could kill himself for 18 months, I was like, yep. I so many times, especially last summer, it was just like, God, help me die for a year and then bring me back.
And then bring me back. I know. So I feel like I missed some of it. So I feel like for some people who really felt that pain, that existential pain, then they might have gotten a lot of like comfort in watching this and a lot of like a voice speaking for them. So I think there's a lot of really interesting stuff we can talk about. But first, let's give, I mean, I don't even know how I'm going to do a recap, because it's not like I'm going to talk about the fucking segments or something like that. So I'm just going to do a really sort of like brief, this is what the thing is for people who have no clue. And then I'll say, just watch it. But okay, so basically, stuck inside a room during the pandemic, Bo Burnham decides it's time to make another comedy special after a 5-year hiatus. Using his usual shtick of self-awareness, meta-ironic detachment, cultural criticism, sarcasm, and absurdism, Burnham addresses themes such as isolation, mental health, digital media, sexting, insta culture, wokeness and branding, celebrity culture, the role of comedy in the world, the value of art more generally, a Marxist sock puppet, and a whole lot more. There's really no specific single narrative, but there are definitely conceptual through lines that bridge the scattered and somewhat random segments. And in the end, Burnham's hope is that we might get a little bit of a laugh, have a little bit of a think, and get distracted for a little bit of time from wanting to put a bullet in our heads. The end.
That was a great summary.
All right, but before we continue, we got to give a shout out to our sponsor, Storyblocks. Storyblocks is the complete stock solution, providing an unlimited library of over 1 million royalty-free, high-quality video, audio, and images through cost-effective subscription plans. You can basically get these unlimited downloads of everything in their library by accessing their unlimited all-access plan. If you're a creator, if you're doing podcasts, if you're doing video, don't sacrifice your creative vision because of a lack of budget or resources. Storyblocks has a massive library of pretty much everything you would need in terms of sound effects, music, video effects, for whatever editing software you're using, and they're all watermark free so that you can download all of them. I personally use them on my personal YouTube channel, and then of course we at Wisecrack use them as well. And I've actually had people even ask me, they're like, where do you get some of the video that you use to insert into your like B-roll footage? And I was like, it's a cheat. I use Storyblocks. And they're like, oh, okay. So if you are a creator of any type in the digital space, we might say, then make sure you head over to Storyblocks. That's storyblocks.com/wisecrack. Or you can click a link in the show notes. So that's storyblocks.com/wisecrack, or click the link in the show notes. You can go ahead and get access to all the goodies that they have on offer. All right, back to the show. Okay, so let's start peeling this onion apart a little bit. Let's start with Michael. Yeah, let's bow, is that what you said?
Let's skin this bow.
Let's skin. Okay, let me just ask this question first. Is this the comedy special that we needed at this time?
No, right? Did we need any comedy special at this time?
And isn't that one of the central questions that he asks? And is that like him being aware? Is that an insightful thing? Is like, what do we think about that? Because he does talk about that, right? Like, I just got to do the thing, the only thing I can do, make comedy. I want to leave the world better than how I found it, et cetera, et cetera.
To me, the way it came off to me, and different strokes for different folks, but it felt very mopey and kind of pretentious to me when it was just like him, you know, like setting the camera up, like, what do I do? No one cares about comedy, or, you know, like I'm just a small voice, you know, like to me, like it just felt like, all right, do we need to see this right now? Like I liked, this isn't the Bo Burnham I love, but maybe that's the point, you know, and like we're all going through something. Even Bo Burnham is, right? But I don't know, man.
Yeah. What about you guys? I saw someone make a comment on, like, you know, Bo Burnham being like, I was locked in a room, so I had to do this. And they were just like, I don't know, like Seth Rogen just made pottery for a year. Like, you didn't have to do it. Like, you could have done other stuff. So, but I guess, like, that's, you know, part of what's confusing and interesting and maybe frustrating about the special is, like, you know, the whole conceit is sort of like the emotional man locked away in the tiny room, but it's like, is the guest house for his gorgeous home where he lives in with his partner and dog. And you know what I mean? Like at the end
yeah,
of every
he's a famous filmmaker.
Yeah. It's just sort of like, I don't know, like were things really, there is the part of my brain that's like, oh, it must've been real hard for you, my guy. But I don't know, but I guess the one thing I will say is at least he didn't make it about, I like the way that he responded to the year without naming the things, because he doesn't talk about coronavirus, doesn't talk about the specifics of like the protests and civil unrest and everything was happening in the country and stuff like that. He responded to those things in a way that made them more about him in a way that I think was good, because it wasn't Bo Burnham being like, let me guide you through making sense of the last year, because I think that would have been bullshit. And I'm glad that he avoided that. Who knows if he was tempted to do it, but someone's going to make that special and that's going to suck.
He is aware of this though at times, right? It's like he constantly even recognizes like he'll be like, oh, but you're saying that I should shut the fuck up, and I'm not shutting the fuck up. And he's like, yes, but, and then it cuts. And so the idea is, again, is that I get the sense that he's like, I don't know what else to do, and the only thing I know how to do is this, and it might be stupid. And he's like, but what the fuck am I going to do? I give away my money. I'm not going to give away my money. And then it's like, I could just not make stuff. Well, that's fucking stupid. I could put a bullet in my head, but I'm not going to do that. So literally, it is like there is zero decision. And that's kind of how I felt like this whole comedy special was. I'm at this precipice where no decision I ever make is going to be the right decision. And so therefore, I just do something. And it's the only something that I know how to do. And so here you go. And at the very least, I hope you like it. And is that clever? Or is there a sense in which it's like, I don't know. Like a cynical take would be like, oh, he's just going for a cash grab because you know he can make some money during this time. Or there could be some sort of...
I don't believe that.
Yeah, and I don't think so either. I think there is. I think he does seem to be a genuine human.
Yeah.
So
I trust his intentions a lot. And that's the thing.
Yeah,
I think that's the reason
too.
Why, like, even some of the critical takes, I'm not getting, like, too mad at him because I think he's an introspective, creative, talented dude. The thing he managed to make on his own is just incredible. Like, this one day, I was trying to make this 90-second video, and it took me all day, and I just got pissed off and deleted it, you know? So I just think I wonder if his thinky side needs to catch up to his artist or performative side. He can sing. He can write songs. He can structure stuff. But I feel like in this special, he thinks he has more to say than he does, and I feel like that's where it falls flat at certain parts.
See, I think that he's one of the few performers that, like, I actually... he says so much by saying so little in all of his other performances, if that makes sense. Like they're so well choreographed and put together and written and smart, and like they do have a point. Like every bit, you know, has like a meta point and a point and whatever. And this is where I felt like he kind of regressed in this thing. Like somebody made a good point in the chat. I was paying attention. Ellie Warner said, you know, was responding to me talking about how pretentious it was. And he says he works in pretentiousness into all of his specials. And like and then she says, and he even brings it up in this one. And yeah, he comments on his commentary or how pointless, you know, him saying something is in the thing. And I think that in other specials, he does that with that more efficiently. And he ends up actually saying something. Whereas this one, it was almost like a cover. It's like he basically was kind of saying, I have nothing to give right now or here's my plight. But then also, who cares about it? That's being really self-aware, basically, while not saying anything is how I took it for this one special. What did you guys think about that? Or just using self-awareness as a cover to not say anything?
I mean, I couldn't help but think about that, like, Gal Gadot video that had to have come out at some point when he first started making this, the Imagine thing at the beginning of the pandemic, where the celebrities told us we were all going to be okay because they knew the words to the John Lennon song.
It's classic.
Yeah. So I looked at it a little bit as like, okay, like he is aware of all the very tone deaf things celebrities and famous people have said to try to make people feel better. And he's at least operating with that awareness. And I think he invites us into that tension of someone who both knows that some of this is bullshit and knows that there's this ridiculous tendency of famous people to try to make sense of things when their lives are pretty easy, but he's also like a person who minds the depths of his own, you know, mental health to explore how he's feeling. So to me, it felt like it was in this like middle tension place between those poles.
Yeah, it's so this is kind of shifting tack a little, but I was chatting a few months ago with an actor friend, and she was basically telling me something that it kind of has stayed with me. And she was like, male actors or male performers, we might say, oftentimes get rewarded for doing something that like female or women performers just do all the time. And I was like, well, what do you mean? She's like, you know, when Christian Bale loses weight or has a freak out on set, people are like, oh, he's just so passionate about his art, right? And it's like, oh, because a man just shows a hint of emotion, like he just automatically gets rewarded for being human, like on this other side. And I was, and it's kind of stuck with me a lot. And I don't know how far to take it, but I kind of feel like the tortured artist syndrome is something that gets romanticized with men a lot, right? The guy who is really struggling and working through, but we don't oftentimes romanticize it for women artists, right? Like, you don't oftentimes, like, yeah, you'll be like, it'll be like, oh my God, they had so much, Sylvia Plath was such a tortured soul. But it's never like such a beautiful artist, a romantic, tortured artist. Sarah Kane, who's a brilliant playwright, a British playwright. Like, they'll be like, oh my God, she had demons and stuff like that. But it's very rare that it comes with the romanticism that you get, where I feel like a lot of people then automatically romanticize a dude when a dude is going through kind of things that are, not that it isn't a big feat to do an inner journey, but it's just that it's kind of glossed over with this like sheen that it's given a lot of times, and we kind of are like, oh my God, and we praise a lot of dudes when they kind of engage in this terrain, and I don't always know if that's the best thing, and I wonder if there's something kind of interesting going on there as well. And then I think Bo knows,
you mean just
this,
the double standard, or the fact that we're praising, what do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's a double standard, but then it's just kind of interesting that I think Bo kind of leans into this quite a bit. He plays the role of being the tortured artist a little bit, you know? And it's something that he gets away with, and then he gets a lot of credit for, and people kind of then are just giving him a
few praise. I wouldn't say he's getting away with it. I think he's just, there's probably an element of truth to the double standard of genders and the tortured artists and whatnot. I think you can find examples of it, though. But yeah, he definitely, up till now, though, he's been, to me, a very energetic, like, almost savant prodigy kid. You know, we met him, when he was 15 or something? And he was super smart, sang, you know, all the lyrics and of his early songs and stuff. And then his stand-up was super smart. And then, I this is the first time I've seen him as the tortured artist, really. Because, he opens his special by literally talking about wanting to put a fucking gun in his mouth or whatever. And you're like, okay, well, that's the way to start, you know? And honestly, we haven't really talked about it, but him talking in front of the mirror at the very beginning of this special is, I think, very important to this whole thing. Cause when he did it, I was expecting it to kind of him to subvert that or something. Cause he literally is talking, you know, filming into the mirror, just saying like, I don't know what the fuck this is, basically. Who knows? I just filmed this and here I am. And I was like, okay, waiting for the joke. But no, he was being real. Like, I kind of, you realize that as the thing's going on. He just doesn't know what this is. This isn't anything. To call it even a comedy special, he doesn't even know what it is. So, and it's interesting that here we are, like, trying to, you know, twist all the meaning fucking that we can from it. Which is what we do. So, no big deal. But yeah, I like that he did that. I just, none of it worked for me, almost. Like, almost none of it I thought was that funny or whatever, but I don't know. A lot of people like the sexting and the relate, and the Jeff Bezos one, I think, was my favorite one. That was the most relatable one to me, was the Jeff Bezos.
That one's very random and funny. I do think there's something about the packaging of it, right? Like, and I think this is something I think that, like, Brits, and I don't know if other Europeans do this well as well, but there's like this history of like the one person show that sits at this space like between theater and stand-up comedy, and I feel like we don't like have that space as much. And then that American comedy is so tied to like the stand-up special that our brain hears like comedic thing. And I just like, if this was more like a one-man show or something that was comedic but wasn't like a comedy special, I think that framing would have helped me. But I think there's something hard about like, oh, Bo Burnham has a new special. And of course it's Bo Burnham, so I expect it to be, like Ryan pointed out before so astutely, like these different meta levels of commentary he has. But yeah, it wasn't the funniest thing. And I think the second time through, when I knew I wasn't going to laugh a lot, I liked it better because I wasn't waiting for like some punchline to hit. Not that he's like a punchline comic anyways, but you know what I mean.
So it's kind of funny because he does like at the end of Make Happy, I think, where he says like, I hope I just made you laugh. And he kind of does like the kind of laugh. And I think he is very aware that that's the kind of laugh that he's trying to get out of a lot of his jokes, right? It isn't like the bending over and like, oh my God, you're laughing out loud, like when you listen to Patrice O'Neill or something like that, right? Like, I think he knows that he's eliciting a different type of response. And I don't know, maybe I'm giving him a lot of credit, but I feel like there was a lot of control in making this, like that he knew kind of exactly what this was going to be, how it was going to land. It's a very well-crafted piece, I think. Yeah. What were you going to say, Ryan?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, I thought you were going
to... Before I was asking if you meant he was going for the laugh on this one special or all of his work, you think that that's
on this
one generally goes for?
On this one in particular. Yeah.
Well, can I ask you guys this then? If he's going for that laughter, like, what do we think he's trying to say? Because I don't know. I think there's a few readings we could have of the thing as a whole. Maybe he's trying to say nothing. Maybe he's capturing a mood. But I'm just curious if for either of you, there was a thematic to this, a thing that's on his mind, one thing he's trying to say or communicate.
Ryan?
Well, can I answer your question with a question? And and this is, you know, the mental health aspect of this whole thing, right? Like, is in terms of, like, a lot of people are saying, you know, like this is a man who has a literal mental illness and is you're watching him cope with it through his art, you know, which I like that interpretation. But do we think that that is the reality? Does Bo Burnham? I mean, I don't know the answer to this. Like, I'm sure there, you know, objectively, I know he has a lot of anxiety issues. Does he consider himself to have a bona fide chronic mental illness, you know, and that that's what we're watching him deal with?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, does he suffer with clinical depression or something
severe,
like that?
Yeah, severe clinical depression, exactly. You know, I mean, he does talk about putting a bullet in his mouth, obviously. And
there's this section.
So, I mean,
where
that. But basically, to answer your question, Mike, then that could very well be. It's watching somebody deal, you know, with anxiety, depression, and stuff right in front of you, and making art out of it. And what during the most tumultuous time in American history ever in all of our lives. And you're kind of, so, you know, that is one interpretation of it, if that's what's happening.
Were you going to say there's this one part, Michael?
Oh, no. But because I liked what Ryan was saying. Yeah, well, about the mental illness thing, there was the one part when he plays the video game of himself. At the beginning, it says something like SSRI Industries, which, you know, SSRIs are a type of antidepressant. Yeah, so I didn't know if that was him. Yeah, so I was like, oh, is that him, like, commenting on, you know, going through an experience of being depressed and taking medication or whatever? I don't know, but it seemed to be at least, like, a wink to that.
Yeah, I think if there is a single thematic, it's about detachment and loneliness in the digital age where everything is mediated by everything. And so there's that internet song where he says, you know, a little bit of everything all of the time. And it's that little idea that I think is really the motif. That's like, oh yeah, so we are constantly fractured. So what do? We go on Instagram and we kind of all mimic each other. And we post the same photos in the same way, in the same lighting. We're doing the same things because we're trying to connect with people. Or we sext with people. It's not sex, but it's the next best thing. And we're all doing the same thing. And we're laughing because it's like, oh yeah, we have the emojis that tell us how to sext with, you know, the person that we're engaged with this activity with. And we all say the same things and we all struggle with the same things. Like, oh, am I going to take a picture of my penis? It looks weird. And you know, it's and then it's we have kind of like cultural issues that we're dealing with like celebrities or with like economic exploitation. And but what the fuck do we do about it? Well, the only thing we can do about it is kind of maybe go on the internet or shout something into the void or say something, you know? And so I think that for me, the theme is something about the kind of like mediation of everything that is at our fingertips all the time and how that leads to fracturing, isolation, et cetera, et cetera. And then the pandemic for me is only like the catalyst that kind of exacerbates that tendency. And so I don't think that the pandemic, I don't think that this inside special is something that couldn't have been made outside of the pandemic. You know, I think that it's something that is kind of a universal theme that is becoming more and more potent the deeper and deeper we kind of move into kind of the neo-feudal platform capitalist economy that we're heading into. Mm-hmm. So,
Yay.
to piggyback on what you're saying, too, in terms of I think form-wise, I was really pleasantly surprised that he could have easily used all these internet clips and made it way more jumpy and stuff and way more graphics heavy, but it was very much like him filming with a camera in a weird light thing and weird disco lights or whatever in his room, and he didn't use all these graphics. He's making all these references to stuff rapid fire, but you kind of have to just be listening to the lyrics and stuff. And I think that was cool that he's, it's like a very, it's about the internet, but of kind of less internet-y MTV style, however the hell you want to call it. Sorry, Mike, I cut you off.
No. Yeah, if I were to give an extreme take on what I think it's about, maybe, and I'll preface it by saying something I really liked about it is he didn't tell us what to do. So there's like a lot of comedians these days who will be like, climate change, and then they'll like be like, these people are bad, we hate them, they make the world bad, but me and my friends, we're the good ones. And I'm like,
eat shit,
this is not funny, and you're not doing anything. What are you talking about? And I like that Bo Burnham was like, opened us up to his critical process of thinking about the world, but wasn't like, I'm the good one, be a good one like me. But I do think, and I'm gonna, this is riffing off a couple things he says in two of the last songs of the show, I kind of think it's a really like fatalistic take on things, in which he thinks like it's done, like it's over. Like, we're not gonna make the world better. We're not gonna stop climate change. We're not gonna de-digitize the economy and people's attention spans. You know, he talks at one point about like, digital media corporations exploiting the neurochemical drama of our children for profit.
Yeah, that's when he's like laying down all like sad on a fucking pillow. And he's like, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a fall, like a fall narrative.
He's like I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. We've eaten the apple. Yeah. We've eaten the fruit.
And in one
of
their final songs, he says, you say the ocean's rising. I don't give a shit. You say the world is ending. Honey, it already did. And I think there's this sense in which like he's trying to be honest about the state of the world. And I don't think he's expressing a hopefulness about making things better, but I think he's trying to honestly acknowledge the state we're in. And I think especially when he talks about the effect of the internet on everything from like, you know, the Silicon Valley types to children's neurochemical transmitters to what it means to feel like you've got to create content at a constant clip. I kind of appreciated that. And I almost found his like pseudo nihilism comforting because it felt honest to me.
You like know what it kind of reminds despair. Me of? It reminds, an honest despair. It reminds me of like the lamentations of like ancient religious poetics, right? Where you're just lamenting that fucking destruction is coming. You've been abandoned by God. The world is against you. There is no hope. And it definitely has that type of lamenting type of vibe to it. But here's the thing is whenever someone like makes such a cry like that, it's not necessarily like they're making an objective statement about the world, like the world really is over. It's more of just a fuck, this is bellowing from the depths of my soul. And is that why you
found in the moment?
Yeah, like so is that maybe why you found comfort in it? Not because he's saying like therefore don't do anything, because he's not making like political or social prescriptions here. Yeah, he's just
saying,
that's
when I liked it the best, when it was at its most existential. You know, makes you think of there's a lot of existential literature, people talk about, you know, sort of tap dancing on the abyss. And people like, Friedrich Schelling and Soren Kierkegaard are always talking about like abysses and chasms and pits of unknowing. And it is that feeling of like, oh shit, things might not get better. Oh shit, this might be the way the world is. But it seems like he's describing it from this experiential and existential perspective, not the sort of like, according to a recent UN study, if temperatures don't blow, you know, he's not doing that.
Yeah.
Which some comedians actually do, which once again, we know this now, I hate them. But yeah, so I like that it's a subjective thing for him.
Well, I like that I have always liked that he deals with stuff head on, you know. He's not afraid to tap or tiptoe around stuff or whatever. He goes straight into all these, you know, intense issues. And that's why, kind of like I said before, before when it had commentary, this was just kind of wallowing in it. This was just kind of saying like, all right, yeah, this shit's fucked up. This shit's fucked up. This shit's fucked up. And I'm acknowledging it, but I have no power to do it. Here's a funny song about Instagram. And that's how I'm dealing with my state of mind. I don't know. I'm being cynical about it. I feel bad about it because he put a lot of his heart and soul into it. Yeah. Sorry, Bo, if you're ever watching this.
No, the depth of analysis isn't as deep as some of the ideas and the pathos he expresses. And I think that's where it feels lacking. I think in previous specials, it's very clear. This is someone who's thought about entertainment, what it means to be a performer, the psychology of the performer in such deep and profound ways, especially when he's like a teenager. And it's like, I couldn't do shit when I'm a teenager. How are you doing this? I think now he's like, oh, wow, there's these structural things in the world. And he's smart enough to see that. He's smart enough to connect the dots. I just think he hasn't thought about it for as long, so doesn't have as much depth to contribute. In that, like, I think for any of us, it's not like we watched this and we were like, oh my God, I never thought about that. We were like, oh yeah, that's true. That's a way to think about it. Whereas in some of the previous specials, there were times where I was like, oh fuck. never thought about that part of being, you know, of making content or consuming content or whatever. And that's why I'm kind of curious to see what he does in the coming years, because it seems like he's on an interesting maybe trajectory now. Yeah. I'm very hopeful about the future of Bo.
So many people that maybe didn't study philosophy or that don't spend as much time doing this type of cultural analysis, they seem to be really kind of taken by the analysis, right? So do you think there's also a sense in which it's kind of like Zoomers or, you know, those who don't spend as much time thinking about art in this way, that for them, they're like, oh, fuck, like this is actually clever.
Zoomers are smart. I just want to say so everyone knows Austin is the one that implied Zoomers are bad. Zoomers are dank and have like sick TikTok memes that explore like political economy with stuff. No, the revolution's going to come and I'm going to be a generation traitor. I will kill a millennial to let the Gen Z know I'll be a foot soldier. I just think you got to pick sides and that's where I'm at.
All I went to say was people who have yet those of the Zoomer generation who have yet to kind of delve into this type of analysis, you know, or those of even the millennial generation who don't spend as much time on this, or fuck, maybe even Xers. I mean, I don't know. But just the idea is do we think that for people who don't spend as much time engaging in this type of cultural analysis, that this was kind of like an oh shit moment for them, you know? Like,
I would say this was a perfect like, yeah, introduction to like the philosophy subreddit cover or something, where it's just like, all right, yeah, you know, for younger people, I could see this totally working on me, where I'm like, wow, that was a deep special. I want to be like Bo Burnham and make cool stuff. And in that way, that's a good thing. Hell yeah. You know, even though me, this jaded 34-year-old, you know, podcaster on this show who's tearing this shit apart. I mean, like, the dude clearly went out and made something, you know, I think it just was very surface level, I think, the commentary, whereas before it wasn't.
Okay. So then let's think about this.
He has a lot to live up to.
Why do some people gravitate to this so much? Like, why has this caused such an uproar? Like, Michael, I know you've tweeted about how some people hated on the special. I haven't seen so much hate. The critiques that I've seen are more from, like, academically minded types that are like, oh, it was just kind of shallow and it wasn't that deep. It wasn't really that acute analysis.
I think a lot of cranky comedy types hate it. And I think it's a lot of people who I follow on social media who are, like, comedians or writers or performers or comedy critics who are a little bit older and are kind of just like put off by his earnestness. And that's why I think some of those criticisms, I think they're kind of bullshitty. It's like, okay, just because this person like has feelings and stuff doesn't mean we get to be like, he's not funny. But I think there's also a type of person, and this is a couple of critiques I saw on the internet this week. I don't really agree with these, who were like, oh, so the guy that lives in a mansion has millions of dollars and has a guest house to make his special and is going to tell me how hard the world is? And like, I get that. And that's, one person who argued with me on Twitter about this was like, basically argued that he's never struggled for anything, so why should we care about what he has to think? I'm not going to say what I think about that necessarily, but I think that's some of the criticism comes from that. And I think some of the other criticism I've seen from people that are a little bit more sympathetic are like comedy types who are like, this is really cool looking. It's extremely impressive. This guy's really talented, but I don't know what he's really saying. Or they find what he's saying a little bit like surface level.
Mm.
Note, not things I think necessarily. I'm just reporting the front lines of internet commentators.
Okay, then why do we think that on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, why are so many people just enamored by this? Like, why do people love this? What is it about this special in particular? Is it at this particular time? That's why I asked at the outset, like, is this the comedy special we needed at this time? I think some people really felt like they could like their voice was being given some sort of airtime.
But I think this, has anyone else made, like, post-pandemic art that really captures what it's like to, like, be in your like shitty house or room and you truly can't remember the last time you showered and your hair is all crazy and you smell bad, and especially if you're a creative person, you like want to make shit but you feel too like bummed to make shit, and maybe you cry a little bit but then you like watch a funny video and you forget that you were crying? Like, he captures that really well, like, really well. And I think a lot of people that didn't live in Australia just surfing through the pandemic can, you know, relate to that a bit.
Yeah, people like comedy, they like honest observational humor stuff, you know, and topical things. We're like, oh yeah, I agree with that kind of stuff. And he's a charismatic dude. You got funny songs, always a winner. And yeah, and honest. And honestly, I do think that there's a lot of people dealing with severe anxiety and mental issues and stuff that relate to it. So you, because of the pandemic and not because of the pandemic. And so, yeah, so I think that all that in one makes it a big, makes it a hit. In the TikTok age.
I mean, I've been going through like my own little bout of writer's block, right? And I've done a lot of like self-diagnosis just over the years in general. Whenever I'm in one of these funks, what is it? And for me, it oftentimes comes from, it's like a lack of confidence, right? It's like a crisis of faith. Like, my favorite thing I ever really heard about writer's block was from Johnny Resnick of the Goo Goo Dolls, who's like, the crazy thing about writer's block. He's like, the crazy thing about writer's block is like, you're still producing stuff. You just think that everything you produce sucks. And so
I saw that behind the music.
Behind the music, yeah, yeah. And yeah. I was like, from way back in the day, right? And so it's stuck with me, right? And I think that's how my writer's block manifests itself. It's just like a crisis of confidence, right? So the first time I watched this, I sat there and I was like, I felt like a big pile of shit because I was like, why can't you just you can't produce anything? Because this. Like this guy, he can write, he can play the piano, he's funny, he's humorous, he's got enough resources to do these cool light displays in this cool little home studio that he has, and you're just a fucking loser and you can't produce anything and blah blah blah. It doesn't matter. You could be like, yeah, but dude, you've done this. Doesn't matter. I'm a piece of shit. And I don't know why I felt that way, but it was almost like I was looking at somebody that was so multifaceted and had these opportunities to produce something, and I got a little envious and a little jealous. And then
How could you not?
Yeah.
I would think you were crazier if you didn't. If you're any type of person who wants to create any type of content that's comedic or otherwise, and you look at the fact he writes songs, and the songs are good, and he writes his jokes and they're good, and his editing, like Ryan pointed out, is good, and like, he's just a super fucking talented guy, and I don't trust you if part of your brain isn't like, fuck. And he's handsome. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So that was my first kind of like, that was my first reaction. I literally sat there afterwards and I was like, huh, that was fun. And then I was like, oh man, I fucking suck, man. I gotta start doing something. And then and then Michael and I had a little bit of exchange, and I wonder how much of this is true. Like, how much of his ability to produce stuff comes from him having just a little bit of like middle class white boy hubris, right? Like, it takes a lot of hubris at some point to be like, I'm just gonna fucking make something, right? Like, I'm just gonna throw it against the wall, especially something this kind of ambitious, totally self-produced, self-shot. Like, there's a little bit where you gotta be a little bit like, okay, like, yeah, maybe it's the only thing I know how to do because this is just who I am, but also where you're like, yeah, people need this. Right? Like this needs to go out. Like, there's something, at least in my mind, that when I make that handoff to like publish something, that I'm like, or to produce something, that I'm kind of like, oh yeah, this needs to be seen by others.
Not to bring up sports, but real quick, there's a thing you hear a lot if like you're watching an NBA game and there's someone who misses 10 shots in a row and keeps shooting, and they'll be like, the difference between a good shooter and a bad shooter is a good shooter who missed 10 shots and he absolutely believes he's making the 11th shot. He has no doubt in his mind. A normal person misses 10 shots and says, I'm not an idiot. If I miss 10, I'm probably going to miss 11. And I think Bo Burnham has a little bit of that in him, where he's like, believes in himself enough to take these shots.
Mm. See, I can admire that, though. And I think there's a way that we could criticize it and be like, oh, it's just like middle-class white male privilege. But then at the same time, there's also something kind of admirable that anyone who's a creative, you have to have a little bit of that, like, okay, I'm going to take that 11th shot. Right? No? Maybe? Yes? Silence? I'm alone.
Ryan did the pre-talk mouth move, and it was like, he did the pre-move.
Well, I was like, think about that metaphor, like, in terms of trying to think of the 11th shot. But, I mean, yeah, there's people of all ages, genders, races are tinkering in the room with shit and stuff. I will say that the fact that he has a name, he knows that his weird little pandemic art project's going to get to be seen by a million people and be on Netflix. So that's not like anybody can go, all right, I'm going to spend a year making this thing in my room and that's all I'm going to do. And, you know, they don't have Netflix paying their utility bill every month. So it's like it's a way bigger risk for anybody else to do something like this and put it up and say, oh, this is going to be my job, mm-hmm. You know, but, so yeah, in a sense, I agree with you.
Yeah. Michael, we were talking before we started recording. We were talking about the white women on Instagram, I was laughing about it because there've been some really clever sort of stitches and duets on TikTok of white women who are on Instagram that are like, "Damn, Bo Burnham, I feel really seen," and they show all their photos of them with like the 27 age balloon, or the potted plant by the window, or whatever it is that is very similar to the way that he kind of stages it. You said that you thought that there was something interesting in that song. What was
Here's
it?
Here's the question.
Yeah.
Question for you guys, for everyone who's with us right now hanging out. There's a part of that song, the frame shifts, and the person does a post about their dead mom. And it cuts from like all these little factoids to like someone doing a post about they're missing their mom, tell dad I said hi in heaven, or something like that, right? I feel like there's at least two ways to interpret that. One, Bo Burnham stopping and he's saying, hey, even people that are constantly posting vapid shit or whatever, or, you know, things just like everyone else on social media, they're people too. They have feelings, blah, blah, blah. Other way to read that is people are so cynical these days, they will even turn like missing dead loved ones into content.
That was my interpretation.
Mine. And I do think that that's like, depends on how you look at the special. And for me, the moment I was like, oh, he's saying that like, people do this stuff, and initially we're like, oh, see, they're just doing something sweet. But then you think about it more, and you're like, why do you have to turn this into fucking content? And I think then he's making this bigger point. But I've seen people respond. I think I read at least like one review where they were like, but he backs away and says something really sweet. And I was like, I don't think that was sweet.
Yeah, I don't think it was sweet either. I mean, not that he doesn't have – his critique of culture is always pretty cutthroat. Right? He might back off at some point and be like, well, what else are we going to fucking do? But that's much less like a, oh, but they're genuine in their creation of this Instagram post. He rarely ever goes to that. He's always like, oh, you're genuine, so you think, but really you're just building a brand. Because if you look at everything else from that brand awareness one where he's like, I'm Bo Burnham and I'm a brand now, totally fucking cynical, right? Right? The Instagram one, same sort of thing. Even the sexting song is funny. But I find it also there's a tinge of sadness that's like it's not sex, but it's the next best thing because we can't do anything else because we're stuck in this shitty, isolated situation. So, again, I don't know. I definitely would take the more cynical.
Well, and it does make me think of a point he says. I forget what sketch this is from, but I just have it written down. He said at one point, the non-digital world is merely a theatrical space in which one stages and records content for the much more real, much more vital digital space.
Yes.
And I think that's like a theme throughout as well. Like, who cares about real life? Who cares about being with a real person or comforting a loved one who's died? It's about making that shit digital, getting clicks, making content out of it.
Yeah, and even though he only explicitly talks...
Like and subscribe if you're watching this.
Content, baby.
Even though he only explicitly shits on celebrities for like using social causes for their own self-actualization. I can't remember what the exact line is. But I think that we could also say that, yeah, we also as non-celebs who are trying to be celebs by branding ourselves through our online personas, right? By maintaining our ratings through social media followers and likes and things like that. Like that we too are also sort of like trying to self-actualize by posting about our relationship with our dead mom or whatever it is that we're posting about. That there is a sense in which we're trying to do that. But then here's the alternative. I also won't fault people for doing that because people only have the options to do stuff insofar as they have resources that are at their disposal. And so if you live in a world that only gives you a certain supply of resources, those are the tools that you're going to be working with. So for me, it takes us right up to that limit, and then it makes us say, okay, so if we see that's true, and if we're going to make some sort of like critical remarks on that, then what can we do beyond that? And that's what I think Bo, he does kind of leave us with. He doesn't give us the answer and say, therefore, you should do this, do that, whatever, but it's much more like, okay, so this is the problem, and here we are, we're stuck with a gnarly problematic, and it's kind of like, okay, well, let's kind of confront that head on. I don't know, and for me that's kind of clever. I'm seeing head nods.
I think it's a subtle agreement with you, an agreement with Bo, and I do think you're right. Like, he doesn't tell us what to do, but I think he maybe does encourage you to like acknowledge things for what they really are. And I think a lot of what he shows us is like the simulacrum and the sort of like shit we use to distract ourselves with. And a lot of times in the special, it's like, here's how we normally distract ourselves. If you move away from that, you know, Plato's cave type stuff, you might realize that shit's kind of fucked up, But maybe that's good. Maybe it's healthy to like step away from, you know, the proverbial screen or whatever and break through a bit. So good for him.
Just make your funny songs in your dark room and just hope that everything goes away. Yes,
as we hurl headlong into heat death.
The world burns outside of you, but you're in your room with your piano, dog, and you're doing it, folks.
What were your favorite segments or sketches from this? What do you have, like, what's a highlight? I know, so Ryan, you said the Bezos bit.
Yeah, the Jeff Bezos and all the transitions. I really like the very quick ones. I wish I had one off the top of my head, but you know, the things that would be the little bookends in between the longer sketches were great. But yeah, the Jeff Bezos was probably my favorite long form one.
Is that the one where he said, "Jeff Bezos, you did it"? Is that the one? Or
yeah, it's just him congratulating Jeff Bezos.
It's the whole song about
Jeff Bezos' own personal anthem about how awesome he is.
And he tells like Gates and Buffett they can like fucking suck it because like Bezos is the one. I like how he doesn't say what he did. It's just like, you did it. You did it.
Richest dude in the world.
So good.
What about you, Michael?
I mean, I liked a lot of stuff. I think I liked the React video. The first time through, I did not like the React video. Second time through, loved it. Because I liked when the first time he reacts is like, oh, so right there, this is about like, you know, there's a lot of songs about labor exploitation, so blah, blah, blah. Then the second time he's like, yeah, I'm trying to sound smart there because I feel this need to have everything I say have a meaning. And then the next time through, it's like, see, I like to shit on myself because I'm so afraid of criticism. I undercut myself and criticize, but I don't actually think that because I really believe in what I'm saying. Like, I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to second that was probably the smartest sketch. Like that to me was like classic Bo Burnham fucking meta shit, you know, and stuff. I didn't laugh, but importantly, but I still thought it was good and clever.
Well, and I think that and the funny feeling song were two things that viewing one, I was like, eh. Second time through, I really liked the funny feeling song. There's a line where it's like, you know, gift shop at the shooting range and shooting at the mall or something, or mass shooting at the mall. And then like that funny feeling, at first I was like, what is he talking about? And I was like, oh yeah, the way that like fucked up shit's happening all the time. And it makes us feel weird, but we feel weird because there's nothing we can do about it. We don't know how to stop it. And it's just part of life. And I was like, fuck, Bo, you kind of got that one. And it's so funny when he starts that song and he's like, I'm not very good at guitar and I can't sing either. It's like, fuck you, man. Just go good at playing those sub characters.
You were saying that you're looking forward to seeing what he produces in the future. Do you think he's going to step aside for years again? Or do you think that he's going to do a live? Like once things open back up, do you think he's going to go back to doing? Because he says it had been 4 years and I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to go back to doing live shows. And then that was in January of 2020. And then, of course, he couldn't. So he does this thing where there's no audience. Do you think we'll see him back doing live stuff again? Like, do you think he's going to go direct another film? Do you think, like, what do you think is the future for Bo? Or do you think he's going to be like, fuck, I got to take a break? I don't know.
I hope he does more weird video shit like this. It's experimental. Even though I'm, you know, cracking on it. Like, I think that he has it in him to do all sorts of weird projects. And yeah, I'd love to see another narrative film like Eighth Grade
was great.
And I'd love to see another stand-up special. I'm selfish. I want more Bo in my life. All right. Yes, give me the more stand-up, give me the more movies, and give me more weird experimental stuff. And I just hope I like the next one more. You know,
agreed on all counts. Okay. And I think if I could design a dream Bo Burnham project, I'd love for him to have a TV series or like streaming series that was like 10 episodes and was like vignettes where it wasn't like a narrative structure, but he just did something for 10 times for half an hour.
Are you a Zach Stone is going to be famous fan?
I'm going to be honest. I never watched that. And now I kind of want
to. Well, you got your dream project. Oh. Your dream Bo Burnham project's been made. Well, Go check it out.
I'm a fucking idiot then. I was thinking a little more like him doing like weird like artsy shit. But yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I just wanted to make stuff. I hope he does a live performance. I would like to go to one.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree on everything. I hope he makes another film too because I loved Eighth Grade. So. Okay, cool. So let's go ahead and wrap up the chat about Inside There, and let's quickly turn to the mailbag just to answer one quick email. We didn't get any voicemails. I'm surprised we didn't get any voicemails about Top Gun. I got a lot of people hit me up on Twitter about Top Gun, but we didn't get any emails or voicemails about Top Gun. But people are still talking to us about Pulp Fiction, so we'll delve into some of that. So if you want to call us and leave us a voicemail about Bo Burnham's Inside or about anything from our back catalog, you can call us at 1-213-534-8807. That's 1-213-534-8807. Or if you don't want to leave us a voicemail, you can send us an email at movies@wisecrack.co. That's movies@wisecrack.co. So Albert wrote in about Pulp Fiction and said, "Team, appreciate the call-outs. I wanted to remark on Raymond's feelings about Pulp Fiction. I was also introduced to Tarantino with Kill Bill, and likewise feel like Pulp Fiction is missing something that gives it a spark. I have to wonder if the hype influences our perspectives. Kill Bill came out 8 years after Pulp Fiction. There were plenty who already held it as one of the greatest movies ever made. But by the time I got around to watching, I thought the general consensus was an exaggerated herd mentality. I liked Jackie Brown and Reservoir Dogs more for a period. Is that rational? Are there movies that you caught late whose reputations influenced your thoughts on the film? What do you think?"
Mine, probably number one for this, is 2001, where, you know, I think I saw it because Tom Hanks was talking about it in interviews for Apollo 13, and I was like 10 years old, like, oh, I want to see another space movie. And then I go, and my dad's like, "Are you sure you want to see this movie, 2001? And I'm like, "Yeah." And then I'm like, I could barely get through the monkeys. You know, it was like, what the fuck is this? Why did Tom Hanks lead me astray like this as a 10-year-old?
No, but so, you've revisited the film since then.
Yeah, Austin. Yeah, and I love it like a million times.
He's a film guy, Austin. What do you think?
I'm a film guy.
It's on the podcast. I know. He's watching it now. I see the glare on his face. It's on the screen right here. Right there.
Dun, the dun, dun. Yeah. Yeah, so... So I wonder if also the hype thing, because that was like an age thing too, right?
Yeah, that was more of an age thing probably. So that, you're right. In terms of pure hype, I'd have to think a little bit about it. What about you guys?
Yeah. Michael?
The only thing I can think of is like I didn't watch any Paul Thomas Anderson films for a while. And I'm trying to think of the first one that I did. But when I finally saw them, it was very much detached from the narrative and hype surrounding them. And like them all very much because this is a real hot take I have that he's because
he's a good director.
Yeah, Paul Thomas Anderson is good at making movies. You heard it here. People are gonna be like, "Holy shit, he cracked that egg." I don't know. I think that's one thing that comes to mind. It's a really good question. That's the sort of question where like it would have been great to hear yesterday and then now act like we were just hearing it for the first time, and our answers have been so good. But this is proof that we're really organically answering this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's to me, it's obviously the case that I oftentimes get, you know, overinflated expectations. Or when I like the opposite. When people shit on something and they're like, "Oh, it's fucking terrible. It's fucking terrible." And then I go see like The Meg in the theater and I'm like, "Oh man, I had so much fun seeing that," you know, because it's a terrible movie, but I knew that it was gonna be a terrible movie. So I was like, I'm gonna go in and see this terrible movie. And then I just had fun, like kind of like laughing at its absurdity, stuff like that. I like that version. So maybe we should just undersell everything all the time is what I'm saying. Like don't.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's just good life advice.
Under promise, over deliver.
Parenting, whatever you're doing, just promise almost nothing. Give a little bit more and it's going to turn out great.
All right, let's get out of here. Where can everybody find you on the internet, Michael?
Oh, Michael O. Burns on Twitter and Michael O. Burns with some underscores between things on Instagram. Come find me. Come to my house.
Sweet. What about you, Ryan?
Ryan Shorts on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, all that shit. I'm release comedy shorts every week.
Go check them out. To the
Austin, how about you? After we watch Ryan Shorts and we want to find you, where do we go?
You can hit me up on my YouTube channel. It's just Austin Hayden. I've got a philosophy podcast called Owls at Dawn. And you can find me on Twitter, Austin_Hayden. Insta, AUS_HAY.
Now you guys both have cool YouTube channels. That's so fun. Congrats to both of you. I like both of them very much.
It's an emerging platform.
I don't buy it.
Creators.
Ryan, send us out of here, brother.
Goodbye from inside my apartment. This has been Show Me the Meaning. I'm scared. What will you do? The world outside. Oh.